Hey everyone, this is a Patreon preview of the penultimate episode in our series on women's labor history in the United States. If you'd like the full thing, become a patron at patreon.com/workstoppage. It's the only way that we get any funding for doing this show at all. Other than that, I hope you enjoy the preview in solidarity.
So nonprofit hospitals in New York were exempt not only from taxes, but from minimum wage laws and from contributing to unemployment or disability funds. They were also exempt from the NLRA and most state labor laws. And strikes of hospital workers were banned. Not just nurses, but any hospital workers. So your porters, your cooks, your janitors, anybody, your aides, everybody, all banned from striking. And so in 1959, when 1199 began their organizing push, the average wage for women workers was only $21 a week, which, when you scale that up for today's money, it works out to about $11,000 a year.
So not a lot.
No, that's like $5.50 an hour.
And this is in New York City?
Yeah, and this is like all of the staff at the hospital, like basically other than the actual direct medical professionals.
Mm.
So this is, and it which is like reflective, but we see a lot today. And that's another thing that I think is another indicator of the shift is we see now a lot more the nurses and the hospital workers striking together, which is of course very good.
Right, right.
And yet, so like wages were so low that most workers had to rely on welfare to get by. So compared to say Walmart today, like that's the situation you're talking about, like comparably, that's how low the wages were for these people working at hospitals in the biggest city in the country.
And back then being on the dole was a lot more stigmatized. Not that it isn't still stigmatized, but I would say that it's a pretty common stigma.
I mean, it was, I don't know. I think, you know, U.S. ideology is always stigmatized any form of government assistance. I feel like it's more the specific rhetoric around it that really changes for over time. And intensity varies a little bit, but I think that's always kind of there.
It could also just be my family that was really had a lot to say about it because I think of the older people in my family and how they thought versus like some of the younger people in my family.
Yeah. Well, and one of the other things though, which is just another thing that could be straight out of a story today, these workers weren't even given health insurance or sick time while they were working at the fucking hospital.
Classic.
Yeah. I'm like, this is, what's the Pittsburgh health company?
UPMC.
Yeah. That's like when we were talking about UPMC, where like, I think like half of their employees have massive medical debt to UPMC. Yeah.
And they just built a gigantic expansion building across the street from their big uptown facility.
Yeah.
And they put so much money into union busting because have had so many drives and have failed each time because of the amount of union busting.
And they give a lot of money to local political candidates.
So if you're wondering if these conditions have changed all that much in the last 65 years... So, and just to emphasize this, you know, a dietary worker, a black woman, Doris Turner, said, quote, "We were caring for sick people, but we couldn't afford to be sick. If you took time off to be sick, you'd be fired." End quote.
Wow, great. So your job is to take care of sick people. So you are possibly at the highest risk of getting sick of anybody in the world, but getting sick is just not an option for you. Mm-hmm. And so worse yet, then you have to come in sick and infect people who have different illnesses, and now you have comorbidities and things happening. Not good, folks.
And you wonder why people consistently thought that, like, oh, where do you go to get sick? The hospital.
Well, but thankfully now we have health safety protocols in healthcare settings, like, you know, getting people to mask where you might have respiratory diseases.
Oh, wait.
We've improved that so much, too. but so, like, because of these incredibly low wages, of course, the hospitals targeted hiring from the most oppressed communities. And so that resulted in hiring a lot of black and Puerto Rican women. Basically, they were trying to find the folks that they could get away with paying the lowest wages. And many unions, as a result of this and a combination of racism, sexism, and lack of initiative, considered the hospitals to be unorganizable. And this resulted in some, you know, some other horrible working conditions, like the fact that men were openly paid more than women for the same job. The men were given free meals during their shifts, which women workers were excluded from. That's the first time I've run into that before.
Yeah, well, that's wild. Just like, oh no, you I can't imagine, like, that's just like, it's one thing to have a paycheck where the paycheck is a piece of paper that is personal. You can, like, you're told not to share it. You know, you have that behind closed doors, but like, you're standing next to someone and one person gets a free meal and then the other person doesn't. Uh-huh. Like,
it's like a cartoon version of disrespect. It's like shorthand in a lot of sitcoms. If you don't like somebody, that you bring food to the office or to the school or to the wherever your sitcom takes place, and then you tell them they can't have any.
Yep.
It's like, I can't think of anything that's more clearly a measure of disrespect than this. More egregious examples, but nothing more direct.
Mm-hmm. Well, and despite this being in the oh-so-liberal Northeast, that didn't stop the hospitals from just straight up barring black women workers from even entering the hospital staff cafeteria.
Because segregation at this point is still very, very alive and kicking. Mm-hmm. Not that, you know, it doesn't still exist in some aspects, but, I mean, you know, it was pretty blatant still at this point.
You get people asking these days, like, oh, haha, you know, these people live in Wisconsin and Maine and Oregon. Why do they have Confederate stickers on the backs of their trucks? Because the North is also very racist.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Although those still do piss me off, especially whenever I see them in Maine. I'm like, my fucking ancestors went down to fight those motherfuckers. Tear that shit off your goddamn truck.
Abraham Lincoln wrote a special letter thanking the boys from Michigan for how fierce and dedicated they were in battle. And we still get like weird fucking idiots who want to be all Confederate about it.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Racists are very annoying. And so, you know, while whenever the workers even talked about organizing, they were attacked mercilessly by the ruling class, using the same concern trolling bullshit that we hear today about how somehow, you know, these workers are just supposed to pay their rent off of compassion and grace and love and feelings and their care for their fellow man. And so, like, Republican Senator Carl Curtis said at the time,
quote, "I think of these charitable nonprofit hospitals which seek to hold down their labor costs in order that their funds may reach more needy people. Many employees serve as a labor of love, as a matter of dedication, yet they must receive and do receive some wages." What the fuck is he talking about?
It's a passion, John. You don't deserve as much because it's a passion job, and also they have to hold down their labor costs
so that their funds may reach more needy people. And, like, you know, I'm asking the same question in 2024, but like, I could think of another cost we could examine at the hospitals that maybe would be able to be stretched a lot further than the wages of the workers.
Well, yeah, and it's also just like, I'm just like, you know, maybe if this system of privately funded, quote-unquote, charitable, quote-unquote, voluntary hospitals is unable to operate and pay a staff, then perhaps this model is not providing the healthcare it claims to be providing and should be replaced with a model that actually does.
Yeah, so many quote-unquote...
Make the state do it.
Yeah, well, I mean, so many quote-unquotes in there. Yeah, really.
Yeah.
Yeah, well. But, so, before the organizing drive at the hospitals, Local 1199 had about 6,000 members, primarily pharmacists and other drugstore workers around the New York City area. And despite the fact that the drive at the hospitals was really like the big jump by 1199 into specifically, you know, organizing black and Puerto Rican workers and really changing the whole demographics of the union, like, there had been the, you know, the fight for social justice had been a part of 1199 for a very long time. Like, they'd been fighting racial discrimination against black workers since a 7-week strike in 1936 to enforce the rights of black pharmacists in Harlem. And so their organizing drive started at Montefiore Hospital, which longtime listeners to our show may remember from a nurses' strike several months ago. So Montefiore still definitely treating their workers great at all times.
Mm-hmm.
Ain't nothing new under the sun.
And part of the reason the drive started at Montefiore was that one of the workers there, a black porter, realized after talking with a relative who had a very similar job at a drugstore, which was unionized by 1199, realized that he was only making half the union wage while working a longer work week. And so with that information, he, you know, was able to kind of turbocharge the drive that 1199 had been trying to start at Montefiore. He spoke with his coworkers, rallied them, reached out to the union, and after an intense organizing campaign over several months, over three quarters of the hospital's non-professional workers had signed union cards. Which, of course, led to Montefiore being like, wow, so 75, 80% of the people, they really want to, we're not going to recognize your union, actually, was their response. Well, that was their response at first, though, because then the workers came back and were like, well, okay, then we're going to strike. And they're like, you said union, we didn't hear you. Oh, sorry.
It's wild how quickly things change as soon as the workers announce, not even that they're striking, but that they are prepared to, that they've authorized it, or even have a vote. The amount of gumption that can put in the boss's shoes all of a sudden is amazing.
Yeah, so on the threat of a strike, Montefiore administrators agreed to hold a union election, easily won, and then they quickly negotiated a first contract.
That's surprising.
That's the one part that's very different from today.
Yeah.
But again, they started this with a strike threat. So like, that's the thing. It's like, I mean, you could be like, okay, we gave you the election. Now we're going to drag our feet. But it's like, well, they already had the unity to threaten to strike. They're just going to do it again.
Well, and it's also kind of interesting because like maybe it's just that the meta has changed. Like back in the day, they were like, well, you just don't let them have the union. And then you don't have to worry about this stuff. And so it was like, as soon as they had the union and the vote was called, like the bosses are panicking and they're like, we don't have Littler Mendelssohn. We don't have the tools to drag out contract negotiations. That shit hasn't been innovated yet because with successful strike authorization votes and successful, you know, union elections just aren't that fucking common.
Well, and like when we talked about in our discussion of Confessions of a Union Buster, you know, that industry really grew up, you know, about 10 to 15 years after this point.
Right.
But that contract negotiation was huge because the new contract nearly doubled the workers' wages, reduced the work week from 6 days and 48 hours to 5 days and 40 hours, won overtime pay for the first time, 10 sick days up from zero, and a company-funded disability benefit fund.
This is a lot of wins.
Yeah. And, like, it's not only a big victory on its own, like, for the workers at Montefiore, but it was also a tentpole win because it showed that nonprofit hospitals could be organized, that these workers that were supposedly unorganizable, well, 80% of them just fucking won their contract by threatening to strike. That seems pretty goddamn organized to me. So... This was a really important victory, and following the win, 1199 went all in on organizing New York's hospitals.
Guadalupana, sabrá. Amen.